Hey, I'm Abigail Johnson, and you're listening to the Tennis in the UK podcast. Welcome back to minus 6 degrees Celsius. Sorry, I meant the UK, of course, which, despite the off-season, will get the opportunity to witness top-level tennis next week when Battle of the Brits returns for the first time since lockdown 2020. This time, it takes the form of a two-day event, Scotland versus England, on December 21st and 22nd. Yes, that is next week, and we are that close to Christmas. It will be staged at the P&J Live Arena in Aberdeen and streamed across BBC iPlayer, The Tennis Channel, and Jamie Murray's official YouTube channel. So, who better than Jamie Murray, 7-time Grand Slam champion and former world number one, to get on the podcast to talk all about it. Back in 2020, the Battle of the Brits was Jamie's concept, and alongside Mary Greenham and team, he has successfully tournament directed 3 editions of Battle of the Brits to date. This Scotland versus England clash was initially scheduled to take place last December, but ended up getting postponed late in the day and rescheduled for this year. Jamie himself will feature alongside players such as Dan Evans, Jack Draper, and his younger brother Andy Murray. So, over the course of the next half hour, you'll hear Jamie discuss last year's tournament postponement and how that was dealt with, the experiences of Battle of the Brits events to date, recent British doubles success and the factors in that, and his own perspective on the shifting landscape of doubles and how he views his own career right now. So enjoy hearing from Jamie Murray. Joined by Jamie Murray. Jamie, first and foremost, how are you and where are you checking in from? Is it any warmer than the UK?
Yeah, it's a lot warmer than the UK. I'm in Florida just now. I've been here for a couple of weeks now doing some pre-season training. Got a few more days left to go before I head back to Scotland for Battle of the Brits.
Yeah, that's the key name at the moment. Battle of the Brits coming back. Scotland versus England. Probably a bit of a culture shock when you land in Aberdeen after the weather out there. But it's an interesting one, this one, Jamie, because this is an event that should have been happening for the first time last year. And in fact, this time last year, you and Mary and the team would have been in full swing with preparations. And then you had to call it off due to the rise of COVID. Do you remember that time? I imagine that was quite a different set of challenges to anything that you've ever faced on the court.
Yeah, it was hard. I mean, more because we were only like 4 days out, I think, from the event happening. We had to cancel it because of the Omicron cases and variants and all that stuff. So, it was really disappointing to have to do that because obviously we put in like a year's worth of work to get the event basically ready to go. It was imminent, and then I had to cancel, and everything that, you know, the fallout of that and everything that we had to go through, you know, post cancellation, and then on top of that just kind of losing momentum with the event, and almost in a way kind of having to sort of park it for a few months and then start again, kind of build your way back into it, and trying to get everyone, you know, committed to a date, and then, you know, everyone that was associated with the event, whether that was, you know, event staff or, you know, TV crew, production crew, in-house, you know, getting everyone kind of assembled again, if you like, to try to put the event on and, you know, reorganize everything. And it wasn't easy, but I think we're in quite a good spot right now. And it's only one week to go now. So hopefully things will go off without any glitches, and we'll have a great event finally.
Yeah, it's been long awaited, that's for sure. And a great lineup waiting in Aberdeen. How have you found this one compared to, so this would be, I think, the 4th edition of Battle of the Brits, and you had the first 3 during the lockdown period. So this is the first time that the fans are coming in and there's going to be a crowd and you've got all those different technicalities on top. How has the process of planning this one been in comparison to the ones that have happened previously?
Well, I mean, it's completely... it's on a whole nother level once you start having fans in stadiums and people paid tickets to come and watch, and that's a whole new experience for me. I mean, the ones behind closed doors at the National Tennis Centre were, I would say, fairly straightforward in terms of the organising, except the biggest difficulties with them was just the fact that we were working in COVID times and at the very beginning of a pandemic, and we were the first tennis event certainly to go ahead, and there were so many kind of rules and criterias and guidelines and everything that we had to follow, which nobody had ever had to do before. So that was that made that difficult. But just in terms of servicing fans and stuff like that's a whole different ball game, and so much more goes into it. But I think I think we're in a good spot, and really looking forward to the event. As I said before, it's been a long time coming now, and yeah, can't wait to kind of get things underway.
You've mentioned it, the fans are coming in. You've got some big names on the benches as well for both teams. What aspects of this particular event are you most looking forward to?
I think the Scotland England rivalry, I think. I mean, I kind of I'd spoken to the players, had a few different sort of formats and stuff that could be, or styles of event that we could have done, but this was one that they wanted to play and be a part of. And I think yeah, just the fact that you get to represent your home nation, Scotland or England. We obviously always play under the British flag, playing together as teams and stuff. And now to get the chance to go up against one another playing for your home country, I think it's cool. And obviously, Scotland England's always been a huge rivalry across all sports. So I think it should make for a good atmosphere, I think, in the stadium.
Looking forward to seeing how that goes down. And obviously, it can be watched even if you're not in the stadium. So that's great the way everyone can get involved with that. Another event that everyone really got involved with, even from a distance, was the Battle of the Brits team tennis during the first lockdown. And it was an absolute pleasure to be involved in that one. And it's been spoken about a lot, Jamie, in the aftermath because of the impact that it seemed to have had throughout British tennis and kind of the relationships that have developed through it and these WhatsApp group chats that are still going on 2 years down the line, which is brilliant. But in terms of for you going into that event and planning it, I know it's been spoken about a lot, but at the outset of that particular event, what were your expectations for it? And at what point, kind of during the event, did you realize that maybe it was something a little bit more special than anyone had anticipated?
Well, I think going into the event, I knew that it was potential for it to be a lot of fun, just because of the team element, and it brought so many of the players together. And in a way, it was going to be a bit of a free for all. And on the first day, it had obviously. It had rained, so we had to move indoors, and you had, I think we were playing on two courts, and then the players and stuff were sat down the middle on the middle court, kind of watching both matches, and you had people from the NTC up on the balcony and stuff, and like it was an amazing atmosphere, like everyone was so into it, and it was. Like it was fun, people were obviously throwing out comments and things like that, and like it was just great. And then the rest of the week, I mean, it was like a heat wave as well. It was like 35 degrees every day, like it was brutal, which kind of made just some funny moments from that, like the guys sitting on the team benches with their brollies over their heads and air horns and. Comments flying around all over the place. Like it was just mental. It was so different to anything that we would used to be playing or probably will play in the future. And I just think that it was such a cool way to kind of bring so many of the players together, and I think the opportunity for some of the younger players at the time to go be part of an event with Andy and Joe, Konta, Evo, Kyle, Cam, these guys, like it was an awesome opportunity for them, and it brought some of the lower ranked players as well to together, and I think it just probably made people feel more inclusive, I think, as part of the sort of like core group of British players, and I'm sure it was a great experience for a lot of them, and I think I think you can see after that how so many of them went on to do like good things on the court, and like Lloyd Glasspool, for example, was almost top 10 in the world. Lizzie Barnett, Liv Nicol has been doing great in their doubles. Will be at Grand Slam level now. Had an amazing Fed Cup. I mean, Emma obviously did what she did in US Open, and I think I just think it was a great sort of, I don't know, almost like bonding experience for so many of the players, and yeah, it brought a lot of them closer together.
Yeah, that was evident. It's interesting that you mentioned Lloyd because I was going to ask you about him, but before I do, there's something that I've always been curious about in terms of team tennis and the success it was. We've got Scotland versus England coming up, which seems like a perfect tournament to be played in front of an audience, getting the crowd involved. I've always wondered, do you think team tennis would have had the same vibes if there was a crowd there? Because you mentioned kind of the trash talking and the sledging and everyone kind of going crazy. Do you think it would have played out the same way if there had been people in to watch from the stands?
I think the difficulty or the thing maybe the concern would be if fans were there more, that fans would start to kind of heckle and stuff, and then it kind of loses control a bit, which you wouldn't want. I think the thing with the players was that they all knew each other and they were good friends, and so it wasn't like anything like really personal or anything like that. But I think if it was random people in the crowd started to kind of give you grief and heckle you and stuff, then I think then it kind of loses it changes into something else, which I wouldn't really. I don't think I would be a fan of necessarily. So I think that is another reason why it kind of worked so well, and probably just the players felt like they could be themselves. I think if we were to do another team event, with the boys and the girls and stuff, like I still think it would be fun, definitely be fun, and it would be a good product to kind of showcase to the British public. And I think also that was another thing that came from the team event, was that it showcased more of the players to the British tennis public that maybe they wouldn't have known, because they were younger up and coming players, or they were lower ranked players that wouldn't necessarily be getting like headline space and newspaper space, that sort of stuff. So I think that definitely helped in that regard as well, which is a cool thing, because you want the public to know as many of your players in your sport as possible. But yeah, I mean the team event was crazy. Yeah, it was such a fun week, and whether you could recreate that like special atmosphere in a event where the fans are there, that just with this sort of stuff that was going on, that remains to be seen. But I think if we were able to do it again, it would still be fun. It might just be a bit different.
For sure. I think it was perfect for the time we were in, and that's why that there was so much fun during the event and success afterwards. Now, you mentioned Lloyd. You played doubles with Lloyd Glasspool during that event, and I think that was around the time he was kind of starting to focus doubles only. But he's had a huge season, going from, I think, world number 78 or something to finishing the year world number 12, playing the ATP finals. What have you thought of his progress, and could you sense his potential at that point in time?
Well, I mean, he found himself, a partner that was really into his tennis as well, and you know, get out on the court and work hard together. I think you know, he basically, which was smart on his part, was like, you know, whenever he got the chance to be on court with Louis, he would do it. And you know, he was able to spend a lot of time with him over the last kind of year and a half, you know, developing his game and stuff. And you know, this year they got on a roll. They won a ton of matches, especially sort of from sort of May onwards, I think. And you know, to go from 78, like you say, to 12, like, it's incredibly impressive. You've got to win a lot of matches to do that, and it's not easy in doubles to do that, because it's not easy to get into certain level of events, because a lot of the top guys are protected because they have the advantage of playing all the Masters series. So when you do get that opportunity to get into 500 or a Grand Slam, or like, you need to take advantage of that, because you know, if you're ranked 50 or 40, whatever, those chances aren't coming along that often. So when you do, like, you need to strike, and you need to do well. And they did that, and I'm sure, like, gained a lot of confidence, you know, in the second half of the year with all the matches they were winning. And you know, to finish, you know, I think they did the semis, I think, in the tour finals, didn't they? So
It is.
yeah, I mean, I'm sure he would never have expected that at the start of the year with his ranking, but you know, he put everything he could into his tennis, into the year, and you know, got his rewards.
For sure. British doubles is in a great place across the board, but particularly on the men's side, there were three teams at the finals this year that had a British player within. More players ranked inside the top 100, inclusive of yourself. We've had top men's doubles players for a long time now. You mentioned Louis Kaya there. We've got good coaches, great coaches in the UK as well. So what do you think is the kind of the key to the success in the world of British doubles at the moment?
Well, I think Louis leads that, obviously, and has done for a long time. Yeah, I think, well, yeah, he's the main reason. If he never comes to the UK, we would probably not have had the success that we'd had. It's kind of as simple as that. Like, there's not really much more to say. I mean, I think it's like, and it's probably his biggest achievement since coming here, is like to have three players, three different teams in the finals. Like, it's incredible. It's not really talked about much, I don't think, not that I could read or anything. So yeah, that was really cool. And they all got through the group stages. So you had three British players in the semi-finals of the tour finals. I mean, I don't know any other countries that are doing that.
Louis Kaya sits on the throne of doubles, that is for sure. So we've got to give him the credit. Okay, let's talk a little bit more from your perspective, Jamie. I was looking at your vast doubles history. I don't want to make you feel old here, but you have kind of, I guess,
Unbelievable.
been present across eras because of the length of your career. We go back to 2005, which is when you won your first Futures trophy and then obviously progressed up the levels. Just to kind of see which eras your career has spanned across. I was looking back down your list of results to see when is the first time out of your titles where a partner that you won a trophy with is still active. I had to go to trophy number 20, I think, to find an active partner for you in terms of someone that you won a trophy with. Do you know who you won that trophy with? If I was to tell you where it was, I bet you would know who you won it with, but do you know who it might be?
Not sure, because I think I won.
ATP 500 Valencia.
Oh, with Andy.
It was.
Yeah.
He's of the list of players that you've won trophies with, I think he's the earliest that's actually still active, which I found fascinating. So, in terms of the length of time that your career has spent, where do you feel that doubles is now? I guess that there's kind of two parts to this question. In terms of the level and how it's played, do you think it has changed a lot since you started? Where do you see it now in comparison to then?
I think the game has changed certainly from when I started in 2007, played my first full year. I mean, nowadays, I mean, there's so many more players that serve and stay at the baseline, and get involved in cross court rallies, kind of serve big and then look to kind of dominate with their forehand from the back of the court. So that's definitely changed a lot. It's probably 50-50 now whether players serve volley or serve and stay back. Certainly more, maybe for a while we'll probably be more power-based game because of that, because players can all serve big, they can all hit, big ground strokes, or majority can, certainly the singles guys. I think that's why you see more singles guys having success in doubles. I think the kind of intricacies of it, of the sport, have kind of gone out the game a bit, which is a shame, as it's become more power based. And for, I mean, I guess when I came on, like the Bryans were obviously hugely dominant. Nestor Zimonjic were very dominant as well. They were probably the two standout teams that I remember anyway. Whereas now, over the, I mean, I guess since the Bryans have kind of stopped, or certainly, came off their peak, it was a lot more open. Like Melo Kubot had quite a few good years where they were always sort of one, two, or three in the world, doing well in the Masters. But now it's a lot more open, I think. I think the top teams maybe aren't as dominant, but I think the depth of the doubles game is a lot higher than maybe it used to be, I think. I think players have more knowledge about doubles, I think, than maybe at any time in the past, in terms of sort of movement, positioning, but also understanding like you don't have to serve volley necessarily to win at doubles. I think like if you probably went back like 20, 30 years, if you didn't serve volley in doubles, you'd get absolutely killed because court surfaces and stuff. But now like things are a lot slower, balls are a lot slower. Players have more time to play from the baseline. And on top of that, they can generate a lot more power themselves. So I think that has kind of changed the game a lot in that regard. But it makes it fun that there's different ways to win. I mean, in comparison to my style is obviously very different to that. I play much more kind of traditional, and I don't really have the power game or anything, but I have to, use my skills to still be effective, be annoying to people, play with kind of unpredictability and stuff, which, in a way kind of maybe stood out from what else was going on and kind of gave me an edge at times over other players. But yeah, I think the doubles game is in a good place. I mean, I think certainly since I started, I mean, the in terms of like the ability for people to follow the doubles tour, whether that's through TV or streaming or whatever, I think the fans are a lot more aware of the players, who they are at events and stuff. Like you really get that feeling, and the doubles is always well attended these days. So I think it's, yeah, I think it's going in the right direction. I think I still think there's things that they could do to kind of improve the product as such, but I think the 15 years that I've been on tour, it's kind of night and day to where it is now, I think.
Nice. You've kind of covered my second question there in terms of the profile of doubles, but I will add, based on something that you said there, have you ever felt like you've had to fight hard to stay true to your own game style in the face of doubles changing and having that shift that you were talking about?
Yeah, I mean it was a long time ago now, but yeah, like probably sort of, yeah, maybe like 2009, 10, 11. And I was sort of, you'd see these guys hitting huge serves and, smashing returns around and stuff. And It's like, okay, that's who you'd see at the top of the game. You're like, okay, I need to be able to do that if to compete and try to get to the top. But it kind of went away from my sort of identity and what made me good. And when I started working with Louis again, whenever that was, I think it was like 2013, maybe 12 or 13. He was very much, a proponent, is that the word? Of, me playing to my strengths and being difficult to play against and, just being different and embrace that aspect of it. And, when I did, I started to do a lot better, yeah.
Nice. Let's bring it forward then. Let's bring us to where we are now, end of the 2022 season, and some great experiences for you this season. Added another title to your vast ATP haul alongside Matt Edson. You also played mixed doubles with Venus Williams at Wimbledon, which was a great one to watch. At this stage of your career, Jamie, is it more about the wins and the titles, or is it more about those kinds of experiences that are going to be things that you remember for the rest of your life?
I mean, I guess still think can do both. I mean, I still, yeah. I mean, I want to get back to the top. I mean, that's my goal. I mean, this year was hard from a men's doubles perspective. Like, I mean, obviously won the tournament with Matt in Winston-Salem, but a lot of the year was difficult and frustrating at times. Bruno obviously stopped after US Open, had a big break during the season as well. So I still feel like I'm playing at a level better than what my ranking is, I think. And playing with Mike Venus this year and looking forward to getting stuck in with him and see how it goes. But yeah, I mean, I think for me, like, I still enjoy like the training and trying to get better and working hard during the week to then put your game on the court on the weekend, for example. Like, that's kind of how I look at it. And seeing what you've got against the best players in the world, and that's what's motivating for me. And yeah, I mean, if you get some nice experiences along the way, then yeah, it'd be all the better for it, yeah.
That's great to hear how your motivation has held up over all these years and there's still that drive to keep going. So, focusing on that, looking ahead to 2023, I guess when you're swapping partners a fair bit, it can be quite hard in terms of setting solid goals. So, how does that look for you in terms of perspective of goals? How do you set goals and how far ahead do you look?
Well, I think all, teams that come together and are serious about what they're trying to do, I think that their number one goal is always to qualify for the tour finals, to be in the top eight teams. I think, which, for me, Mike will be no different. I guess what I said before, like, if I'm, if we're out there working hard and feel like we can, compete against the best teams, then we're there to win and try to win tournaments, win big tournaments. I mean, how small the margins are in doubles with the scoring and just the nature of the game. Like, you could lose first round 7 weeks in a row and then go win a Grand Slam or a Masters. Like, it's just the nature of it. And the season is long and you've got to, I think remain calm through the difficult moments and even in the great moments, because you never know what's kind of round the corner. I mean, you'll see that guys go win, they'll win a tournament, then next week first round come crashing back down to earth. And I think it's just kind of like, always being ready at the beginning of each week, because you never know which week's going to be yours, and I think the more that you practice and prepare for every week, you increase your chances of being able to capitalize when those good weeks come round for you.
Absolutely. So 2023, lots of potential. And we're looking forward. First of all, we'll have one last word on Battle of the Brits, Scotland versus England. 21st and 22nd of December in Aberdeen. This is a question my brother asked me yesterday, Jamie, so I'll throw it to you and let you tell the masses. Why Aberdeen?
Well, Aberdeen, well, we, so much of, events and sport and stuff is in the central part of Scotland, in the central belt, if you like, and we kind of wanted to take it away from that. And Aberdeen was kind of a logical choice for us. The venue's like, I mean, just before COVID, I think it'd only been open for like 2 or 3 months, so it was basically a brand new state-of-the-art venue. And yeah, we're excited to go there. It's obviously a bit further for people to travel, but I think the fans that are coming from the local area and stuff have been so grateful for us bringing the event to their doorstep. And yeah, hopefully they'll turn out in full force and support the boys.
Yeah, great opportunity. And I'm sure plenty of great opportunities still to come for you on the tennis circuit. So, Jamie, thanks so much for taking the time. I'm sure I've made you overstay, so appreciate your
No, no.
generosity and looking forward to Battle of the Brits. All the best with that and everything to come.
Thanks, Ali. Thank you.
Thank you to Jamie for taking the time to chat. You can head to battleofthebrits.co.uk to find out more about next week's tournament and ways to watch the action. And there's even more tennis in the UK prior to that. The LTA British Tour Masters kicks off in Loughborough tomorrow with the first of 3 days of competition, and you can watch that live through the LTA's YouTube channel. And it will be myself on commentary for the final day on Saturday. That'll be my last commentary gig of 2022, and next week will be the last episode of the podcast this year. So thanks as always for listening. If you haven't already done so, do follow the podcast on Instagram at tennis_in_the_UK and on Twitter at tennis_in_the_UK. I'll be back with you one last time next week. I'll see you then.